I used to have this dream where I would be laying down, looking up at the ceiling, and these lights would be going by, and people were looking down at me. As I became to understand what it meant to be in a hospital, what it meant to be on a stretcher, what it meant to be in an emergency situation, I was like, oh my God, in this moment, I am someone who is in dire straits, maybe about to die. Like, I would have this dream often. That's why I remember it. I used to make all my decisions, how I dress, how I presented myself, to be opposite of that, because I didn't want that to happen for me. That's when I started to try to dabble in those things. Like, I don't have no tattoos or nothing, or no piercings, but I did get the curly mohawk. I did get the long jacket. I did get the black shirt. And I put it on and nothing happened. So I was like, well, maybe it was just a dream. Maybe I can begin to be a bit more forward and more intentional with the way I try to do things and be a little bit more of a risk taker. My name is Chris Stiff, and I'm a modern minority.
Welcome to Modern Minorities.
This is a show about work and life, told through the lens of what makes each of us different.
I'm Sharon Lee Tony, a Chinese-American girl born and raised in New York City.
And I'm Raman Segal, an Indian-American boy who came from Alabama with a banjo on my knee.
Through conversations with some really interesting people, we uncover the stories, perspectives, and often unspoken truths about how our guests uniquely experience the world.
It doesn't matter where you're from, the color of your skin, or who you love, we're all minorities somehow, but we're no one's model minority.
This is a show about all of you, for all of us. Today, I'm talking to a good friend and colleague of mine, Christopher Stith. Chris is the founder of Chris Stith Works Creative. He is a DC native who has won multiple awards in photography, in painting, and in podcasting. He's also a podcast co-host of Beyond Hood and Evil, which is a great, great show. And we will definitely link you guys to that in the show notes. He and his co-host are hilarious, and they talk all about the Black experience today and really just go into everything from their own lives and their own perspectives and what's going on in the news. What I really love about Chris is when I met him, he was actually a student in one of my classes, and he always asked such insightful questions. But he was also kind of the class clown. So he kind of came across as being super funny, but then really thoughtful at the same time. And he had that combination of things where I was like, what is this guy's story? You know, where did he come from? What makes him think this way? How does he approach things? And now I have the pleasure of actually working with him. Chris does some work for us at my agency, SLTC. He's a fantastic designer and a great video editor. And so, knowing that he had a podcast too, I was like, hey, do you want to just come on and let's just turn on the mic and chat a little bit? And I'm so glad that I did, because just from sitting with him for about an hour today, I learned so much about Chris's upbringing. I learned that he had a twin brother, which I didn't know, but I also heard a lot about the community and the neighborhood that he grew up in DC. And he shared a lot about some pretty traumatic experiences that he had seen as a young child, which I think really helped to form the other decisions that he made to focus on art and focus on creation, and in many ways to take that forward and to establish a legacy. So I think you're going to love Chris. I think you're going to think he's really funny as well. But I think you're also going to find that he's got some really great insights about art and about life and about humanity in general. So with that, I hope you enjoy my chat with my new friend, I guess my old friend, but now my newer, a better friend, Chris Stith. Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for joining me today.
I'm happy to be here.
Yay! It's been a long time in the making too. Like, I feel like I've heard about Beyond Hood and Evil for months now.
Yes.
And the minute that you had mentioned it, I was like, I got to get Chris onto Modern Minorities, just because, you know, our paths have crossed in different ways. And here you are sitting with me. So without further ado, I have a quick question for you. It's the same question we ask everybody. Mm-hmm. Chris, where are you from?
Well, that's such an epic question. You know, haven't heard that one before.
Right.
So it began with, when a man loves a woman, they sing. So I'm from Washington, D.C., born and raised. I'm not somebody that says they're from D.C. and they're actually from Virginia or Pennsylvania or
right.
Silver Spring. I'm literally from Washington, D.C. grew up in Anacostia, Southeast, in the Berry Farm, Parchester area. Went to DC Public Schools, went to Duke Ellington School of the Arts, and went to American University. Like, I spent my whole educational career in DC. So, you know.
Well, your whole life, basically, right?
More or less, yes. And it's been an adventure. You know, I've seen DC transform from what it was to what it is. It used to be Chocolate City. Now it's like Mocha Latte City turning into Pumpkin Spice City. So it's very interesting to see the transformation, the transmogrification of Washington, D.C.
All the different shades and flavors of lattes, right?
Exactly. Yeah, every season.
So when you tell people I'm from D.C., do you ever get asked, well, where are you really from?
Yeah, people used to ask me that a lot because
I'm
trying to be very conscientious of the way and the rate in which I'm speaking because I have a propensity to talk super duper fast. So the first thing people say is like, oh, where are you from? I'm like, oh, D.C. They be like, nah, but where are you really from? Like, I ain't never met nobody that sound like you or talk like you. And it's like, yeah, well, I mean, I'm from here, man. Like, if you meet somebody that's from here, you'll hear my accent a little bit. But, you know, it's nothing that really bothers me because D.C. is a city of transplants, more or less, especially when you start working professionally.
Yeah. Like, so when you talk about the speed of talking, is it because people within D.C. don't speak as quickly or they do speak quickly?
Specifically people from the south side or the southeast side of D.C., in my experience and from what I've seen, they typically talk like this. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like a slow, a little draw. It's almost like a little, like a gruffness to the voice when they talk, you know? And it's like, I don't have that gruffness my voice.
Yeah.
So that's more what I'm referring to. But, you know, and then each part of the city kind of has its own swing in the way that they speak in terms of the rhythm and the cadence. So me and my brother, we didn't really have that cadence a lot growing up because my grandmother, we was more or less raised with my grandmother or whatever, and she's from North Carolina. So I have a southern drawl.
Got it. Yeah.
To a lot of my words, like some of my words come out round, but then some of my words come out sharp.
Yeah.
So
I've noticed that about you. I have noticed your southern drawl, and I didn't realize until just this moment that you're a native DC person because I don't think I actually know any native DC people besides you. Well, I don't know. That's a very big comment. I'm not sure. I might, but I kind of always assumed too that you were from the South or definitely had Southern roots.
Yes.
So that's like, I'm learning new things about you already. and you mentioned, so used to be, what did you call it? Chocolate City?
Yeah. Chocolate City, DC. Chocolate City.
So when you were growing up, what was your neighborhood like? You were growing up, grandma was around. She's like, you know, really involved in your life. What's the neighborhood like? What is little Chris? What's a day in the life of baby Chris?
So it's weird because I this is going to sound strange, but I've seen DC transform from SD or analog to HD 4K. So when I was growing up, DC was not as developed as it is, as you would imagine it to be, you know, even though it's the nation's capital. It didn't have all the accoutrements of a major city.
Yeah.
You know, the buses were made of steel. They had these hot metal seats. The squad cars that the police drove around were still metal with the sirens with the little lights on top. It was like I always remember, like, my memory is very funny because it's like I remember growing up as like sepia tone. Like, everything was very, very saturated when I was growing up.
Right.
And now things are very, like, clear.
Yeah.
It was just a different city. You didn't see that many non-Black people growing up. Like, you had Columbia Heights, which had a lot of the Latin people and a lot of, like, African people lived on Georgia Ave and Jamaican people lived on Georgia Ave. You had the Ethiopians. Mm-hmm. They lived in more or less Silver Spring. But that was kind of it. And, you know, and you had the refuge, the last vestige of whiteness, which was Tinleytown, Northwest Georgetown area.
Yeah.
But all that would just be college students.
Right.
And they would typically commute to the city. And that's what it was. So growing up, it was a very different place than it is today.
Right. Yeah. So that's interesting. So you grew up in a place where it was really homogenous. Everybody looked like you. Everybody was kind of from similar cultural backgrounds.
Yes.
As you.
Yes.
Was your school that way too? Or was it zoned so that there were people coming in from other areas?
Not my school. My school was an area people was trying to get out of, not into. my school, I went to, for elementary, I went to Bernie Elementary School, James G. Okay. Bernie Elementary School. Shout out to all the Bernie Beavers if you're listening.
Yeah.
It was a very homogenous school. It was a lot of Black people. I remember the first time we had two Latino people.
Were you nice to them?
No, I'm not friends with these individuals.
Okay. You knew who they were because they were the only two different kids in the school. That's what you're saying, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Everyone knew them because they didn't look like us. Like they looked like they were culturally white. So, you know, as these things happen, I have a story about them. They became a bit too comfortable with the community they were living in and started using choice words. And that quickly led to them being physical reprimanding for using the wrong words in a very familiar way. And now as you get older, it's like, but they weren't even white. Like they were Latino. It's like, yeah, but they didn't look it and we didn't know. So like you didn't know what a Latino person was. You didn't know what a Hispanic person was, you know, because it wasn't common in our area. You know, I still remember the first time I met a white guy was when I was in FLY, facilitating leadership and youth. It was like a youth advocacy and mentoring program I was a part of for most of my life until I got to college.
How old were you?
I was in a program from when I was 8 years old until I was about 21. So a long term.
Do you remember that experience of meeting someone that looked different from you?
Yes. His name was Greg. He was very tall. I had to be maybe like, I was a little kid. So I remember everything. I have a really good memory. So his name was Greg. He was very tall. He studied political science at American University. He rode a bike every day to tutor me and Anacostia from Tinleytown all the way to Southeast. I can't describe what that is like, but it had to be at least a solid hour and a half bike. And then he would sit down, help me with my homework, with reading. And then I would walk him down to the station and he would ride his bike again from Anacostia back to Tinleytown. It was crazy. Oh, and I remember he had these ice blue eyes, like a dog. Like, yeah, ice blue eyes. Eyes was blue. And I remember it was uncomfortable for me because I had never met anyone with blue eyes in my life. So it was like looking at a White Walker from Game of Thrones. Like, that's what it was like. It was like, yo, what the f-? And I remember I had a hard time looking at him. And one day he was just like, man, you never look at me, man. What's wrong? And, you know, back in the, you know, nowadays, they'd be like, oh, he must be autistic. But it's like, nah, I just told him. I was like, Slim, your eyes are super blue and it make me uncomfortable. But looking at your eyes, like, I never met a boy with blue eyes. He's like, oh, I didn't even think about that. I was like, yeah, it's not a problem. It's just letting you know, like, your eyes were super blue, like ice blue. So, yeah, man, it was crazy.
That is fascinating. So after you revealed that to Greg, like, I feel like I know Greg now, too, just what you said about him. Yeah. But after you tell all this to Greg, does your relationship change at all?
Not really. If anything, it was like we became closer because he was my mentor for about, I want to say 2-3 years, which is tutor mentor for like 2-3 years before he transitioned to do something else. So he just became more candid with me and telling me about stuff, trying to teach me things, giving me more life lessons as opposed to educational lessons. So that was the cool thing.
That's amazing. And then going back to the two kids from El Salvador from your school, did you ever hang out with them?
Nah, no, wasn't my speed. Okay. Not at that time. It wasn't my speed. Like they were different than me and my brother. Like I had this thing I used to always say, man, I'm going to college. Like I'm not trying to get caught up with y'all, man.
Wait, what? I don't understand. I'm still not. I feel like maybe I'm just not grasping. Why were they just, were they like rebels or something? They were like.
So I'm trying to say what I was saying.
Yeah.
So I grew up in a rough area. Around a lot of people that had to make choice decisions to do what they had to do to make a way out of no way. And the way I chose was education.
Yeah.
A lot of my peers did not choose that. So I had to be very careful with who I spent my time with outside of school. That's the best way I could put it. People were tough.
Well, I want to hang on that for a second. That's actually a critical point. So I kind of like you, I didn't grow up in DC. I grew up in New York City. But I grew up around Chinatown. So growing up too, everybody around me looked like me. Like I didn't think of myself as a minority. I didn't really have a concept of that. I didn't really even understand what that meant until junior high or high school. So like my earlier years, like everyone was Chinese. Everybody, you know, basically was from a similar village as my grandparents. Everybody kind of knew each other in one way or another. And like you, it was, you know, some parts were pretty rough in terms of like lifestyle and choices and other things. And education was always really key for my family as well. Like that was, I think most immigrant families or most, you know, minority families, That's how you can get a leg up. That's how you can succeed. That's how you get yourself out of the hood, right? Basically, that's how you get yourself out of Chinatown. Like, you got to earn your way out. You got to get a college degree. You got to get a great job after that. And I too, not till I was probably in junior high school, saw things around me that people were doing at a very young age that I knew was wrong, or that just, it was kind of beyond my ability to even think about getting involved with, like everything from violence to even, you know, drugs at a really young age, like just things that were so counter, I think, to what I was learning from my own family and at home, because I did have, thankfully, I had a great structure around me. Mm. And so talk more about that, because I think that it's those critical moments, right? Like, there's Chris Stith, who you are today, and we'll get more into that in a couple minutes. Mm. But there's a different, like, if you had like a parallel universe, kind of like a Loki kind of lifestyle or whatever, you know, the Avengers, like you could do like different time warps, there'd be some different version of you that maybe made two different decisions.
Yes.
And you could have been on a very different path.
1,000%.
So what was that like? Like, what does that take when you're 8, 9, 10 years old? You know, what are some of those stories from that time?
Man, so it's funny you said 8, 9, 10. Like, I remember in kindergarten.
Oh, okay. Even before that. Yes.
Yes. So it's like my school or where I grew up was different. So
yeah,
let's break it down grade level by grade level. It's like a little marquee of that lets me, like, I had to make a decision. Because I remember when I was growing up, mm-hmm. I used to always think about, this is going to sound like a lie, but it is not. Like, let me take it back. I'm getting ahead of myself. So in kindergarten, I remember I walked in first day of school. I didn't go to preschool in my community. I went to a preschool in another area in Fort Washington.
Yep.
So that's a little bit of ways from where I grew up. So I was around a lot of middle class kids. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. So then for elementary school, we ended up going to school in our community. So everybody already knew each other from pre-K, and they also knew each other from playing in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Me and my brother did not play in the neighborhood until we got to kindergarten, because we always were at daycare. So
right,
we were literally the new kids. And not only were we the new kids, me and my brother looked markedly different than everyone around us, because we were tall, very chocolate skin, clear face, big old eyes, round heads, and this big, curly, bushy head. Everybody else, no one looked like me and my brother. So we immediately, everybody's like, who are these two? Da, da, da. And then we come, hey, what's going on? You know, you got these sweet voices. Hi, my name's Chris. Yeah, it's nice to meet you. Blah, blah, blah. Like, I speak like a storybook person, because all I did growing up was read books. So I spoke the Queen's English. I didn't speak English. So I didn't speak AAV. I spoke the Queen's English. How are you? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. Right. Da, 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 da. Spoke like that. So the kids immediately was just like, oh, these two mugs, soft, dog. They soft. We about to eat them. Like, we about to beat them up. So, you know, me and my brother had to quickly learn a diffusionary tactic to get out of the rapid violence that was escalating. And my first day at elementary school, I remember I was walking around, had on my uniform. No one had on uniforms, even though it was a rule to have uniforms in the school. So that already put my brother in this category. It's like, oh, these dudes weird, man. So I made my cardigan, my button up, my slacks, my little penny shoes. They like, yo, what is that? And everybody else in Jordans, Nikes, jerseys, t-shirts, stuff like that. And I remember I was walking around and my little tie came loose for my shirt. And I remember this girl walked up to me and she took her finger and she licked my chest. And I was just like,
what?
Yeah, I was in kindergarten. I was like, whoa. And I, you know, sensory overload, like, what's happening? What's happening? And I was just taken aback. I was so taken aback. I was like, whoa. So I had to make a decision, like, what am I doing in this situation? And I was just like, run away. So I remember I just stayed away from her for like 3 years. Like, every time I see her, I would turn the opposite way. I was like, man, I don't know what's going on with her, man. She's different.
Yeah.
I don't know what she wants with me. I mean, that's kindergarten. First grade, I had the privilege of learning what it means to get beat in public. So the kids were acting so, one of the kids was acting so bad. Somebody's mother came up to the school and literally beat him in front of the class. He got a whooping in front of everybody. And I was like, and you know, again, sensory overload. Whoa, I didn't even know that could happen. So I'm on my P's and Q's always. I'm like, I don't want to get beat in school. You know what I'm saying? My mother lived up the street. She'd come down here if I was acting crazy or something. But me and my brother also had a very good temperament to us. Like, we weren't wild kids. Second grade, I remember everybody started talking about sex. literally second grade, talking about they doing this, they doing that, they doing this, they doing that. And I'm just like, huh? Like me being a learned individual, I'm like, that sounds impossible. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? And I'm talking about like graphic right. things, like graphic. And it's right. like, we in second grade.
Yeah.
And I had to make the decision.
Seven.
Like,
I mean, 7 years
yes,
old.
Yes, yes. But it's like, everyone's in on it.
Holy moly.
All the students are in on it. It's a common thing. In third grade, I had my first experience with someone that I knew committing suicide. So I learned that death
what?
Is finite. Soon, if it was suicide or murder, I ain't never really learned the details, but I'm just going to say if somebody died in my class and I was in third grade, and that's when I realized life is final. Like, it's not like a video game. When you die, you die. You dead. You gone. There's no coming back. So fast forward, fourth grade, I learned about the difference of social hierarchies, because I was a third grader in the sixth grade reading class. So that mean I was around a bunch of older kids and they saw me mm-hmm. as someone weird, because it's like, man, you a nerd. Like you read up here with us talking about this and that and breaking down this information, and we in here, we don't understand. And it's like, well, I mean, I don't know. It's not my fault. And then next thing you know, it's like, nah, it is your fault. So you had to learn, sometimes you got to learn to dim your light to let others feel comfortable. And that's what I learned in fourth grade. And in fifth grade, I learned about when your body changes and you start getting big. Cause by the time I was in fourth grade, I was already like 5 feet tall. So I'm as tall as my teachers. So like yeah. I had a different experience than everybody else in the class, because my body was changing before everyone else's. So I was much bigger mm-hmm. than everyone. And then sixth grade, that happened again. And then I learned I learned stories of how certain girls are different than other girls, because some of the girls in the class began to proposition teachers about entering into relationships with them, and we're in sixth grade. So it's just like, wow. That was my elementary school experience. Like I could say, it's like, it was like a crash course in real life, social, interpersonal relationships, choices, and what you do dictates your outcome. In third grade, people were stealing cars, running from the police.
Stealing cars,
driving cars. Stealing cars, driving around the neighborhood, selling drugs, getting into real fist fights, like real violence, not like kid violence, like real violence, shooting people, killing people, stuff like that. Like, it's different. So,
oh my goodness.
It was a different time.
You are blowing my mind. Yeah. Like, this is beyond. It is beyond hood and evil.
Exactly.
It's beyond.
So that's why.
Wow.
So when people generally meet me, you wouldn't get that from me.
No.
But I always say it's because of the choices I've made to be the person that I am.
So what did you have in your life to keep you on the straight and narrow then? Because I think, first of all, everything that you said is like kind of traumatic. It's almost like I'm listening, but I can't even allow myself to process, because I can't.
Yeah.
It's just like those ages are so young. You know, the stuff you're talking about.
Yes.
Totally feasible, but not at like 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. Like I can't.
Yes.
I almost have to take a deep breath and like, like, you know, like, whoa. But what in your life prevented you from doing those things? Or did you, I guess another question is also, did you have a place to go where you could kind of talk about this and decompress and have someone else that you could just even reflect with, you know, reflect these things onto, so that you could better understand your place in all of this?
So I guess, you know how when people always say they had that moment when they're growing up, when they became self-aware?
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I became aware of the finality of life, was in third grade. So from that moment on, I kind of had this vision, like, I don't want to die. Like,
yeah.
Because it ain't like, you can't come back. So
yeah.
To answer your question, though, me and my brother, I keep mentioning my brother, Kiego. I have a twin brother. He's awesome. He teaches in New York.
Oh, he's a twin.
Yes, I have a twin. Oh. Yes, I have a twin.
Are you guys identical?
We're fraternal. Yeah, when we were little, though, we looked very much alike.
Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to him. But we used to have conversations. So it's,
yeah.
I can't stress enough the benefit of having someone that you know is always going to be able to understand your perspective.
Right.
And understand what you're going through. Because we would basically come home and just talk to each other about the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of helped us, because I always equate me and my brother to like the Ninja Turtles. So I don't know if you ever watched or played the Ninja Turtles.
Of course.
So you know there's the light Ninja Turtles and the dark Ninja Turtles. Did you ever notice that?
in terms of when they, like the, like even within the brotherhood?
Yes.
Like at any given, okay.
Yes. So,
no, I never noticed that. So who's, well, Leonardo, actually, wait, Leonardo's a lighter Ninja Turtle.
Yes, yes, yes.
And Donatello's a darker one.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, yes.
And Michelangelo, what's he, light or dark?
I think he was, I just remember the weapons. The weapons of the dark ones was the nunchuck. No, not the nunchucks, the sai. The tridents.
Okay.
And then the stick. They were the darker ones.
Okay.
And then the light ones were the ones with the sword. I guess that's Leonardo. And then the nunchucks, which was Mikey or Ruffy. Mikey, right?
Mikey. I only know them by the banana color. So Mikey had orange.
Yes.
And Raffaello had red.
Yes. Yes. So.
So Raffaello was darker?
Yes, I believe so. Raffaello. Yeah. Yeah. So to get back to the metaphor. Me and my brother had a Ninja Turtle experience. So I always ended up in these classrooms with the harder people. They were harder.
Hmm.
That's the way I could put it.
That's
to
the
make
word.
It make sense.
That's
they
the
were,
word.
They Got were it. Harder people. So my experience was dark. And my brother was always in the class with he had a lighter experience. So he was always lighter. So my brother was very much like Mikey. And I was very much Raphael.
Huh.
We had different experiences in school and we would bounce them back and forth. And me and my brother were talking about this yesterday. We have an excellent ability to identify patterns and compartmentalize information and sit on it until we need it. So his experience, I would absorb it. And then when I needed to use something from his experience, mm-hmm. I would be able to draw upon that or call upon that and vice versa. So that coupled with FLY, Facilitating Leadership with Youth, as a refuge from the things that was going on in the community, because I knew I could always count on them to be there and be consistent, positive role models, male, female, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, whatever. You know, they would come and we could experience different cultures and kind of that would act as a escapism in a way. And then there was always art.
Yep.
And there was always my family, like my grandmother and my mom. Like my mom was very, she's a walking lesson in life. That's the best way to put that. And my grandmother is a very strong, strong maternal figure. So I had those two like found as cornerstones in my personality. That's what I have. Like I got this strong moral backbone mixed with this testament of life's lessons.
Yeah.
Mix that together, mixed with my own personal experience and choices. And then my hero fantasy of myself. That's what made me the person I am today.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So you kind of started talking about this, but when you were little, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a lot of things growing up. I was a pretty smart kid. So first I wanted to be an archaeologist because I like playing in the dirt.
Yeah.
And it's very rudimentary.
It's a fun job.
Yes. Yep. playing in the dirt all day, picking up rocks and stones. I was like, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
But then as I began to learn more, I remember in first grade, that's transition. In kindergarten, that was that. In first grade, I wanted to be a lawyer. And I was stuck to being a lawyer for a long time. I was like, I should be a lawyer. I should be a lawyer. I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a lawyer. I should be a lawyer. But then in third grade, I went to a talent show we had in class. And I love watching 1980s movies. So I was watching the Police Academy movie a lot. And I liked the guy that made noises with his mouth. So I went up to the talent show and started making noises with my mouth. And my teacher immediately said, that is not a talent. Sit down. And I was like, but the dude in the Police Academy movie, he does it all the time. And she was just like, that's Chris. That's Mr. Stith. Sit down. Just sit down. Sit down.
Right.
And I went to sit down with the rest of the kids in the class that did not have any talent. And they were back in the back of the room drawing Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
And I remember me being myself. I'm competitive. So I was like, man, I could draw that. They was like, you can't draw. I was like, yes, I can. I can do that. I can draw. I can do anything. They was like, you just went up there and thought making noises with your mouth. You don't even know what a talent is. Like, we got people in here dancing, singing, writing poems, and you making noises. I was like, I can draw. They was like, no, you can't. So I sat down. It was a psychic gym member. I mean, psychic gym leader. And I sat down. I copied it perfect, like a scan of it using Crayola crayons. And everyone around the room was like, wow, why did you get up and draw? Like, we didn't even know you could do that. And I was just like, I thought everybody could do this. And he's like, no, everyone can't do this. This is a talent. And then my teacher was very upset. She's like, yeah, Chris, you should have drew. So from that moment, I was like, oh, I guess I should draw. So I just started drawing. And I was going to be, I wanted to become an artist. Then I wanted to learn how to play video games. And then I wanted to be a video game developer. And I was like, I don't want to do that no more. I just want to do art. Fast forward, high school, had the choice in DC in my time when I was growing up. There were only two schools you can go to. There was School Without Walls or Duke Ellington School of the Arts. School Without Walls is like a college accelerator program.
Uh-huh.
And it's on the campus of George Washington University or affiliated with them in some capacity. So if you go there, you get a super duper rigorous academic educational program. And then you had Duke Ellington School of the Arts, which is the art school for all the artsy fartsy kids.
Yeah.
And me and my brother decided to go to the artsy fartsy kids school. And that just kind of set me on the path to what I am today.
Oh, so your brother went too. So you both studied art.
Yes. Yes. So, and that's how I became the person I am today. And I ended up doing graphic design.
All right. Hold on. Pause. We're getting there. So when the two of you guys decided you wanted to be artists, did grandma have anything to say about it? Did mom have anything to say about it? Like, what was their response to that?
My grandmother was a limitless bounty of support in all endeavors. Whatever me and my brother wanted to do, she always supported us. So
grandma,
she saw that we had a predilection for art.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to buy us drawing books all the time, art supplies, drawing books, art supplies.
Yep.
So she just supported us because she was just happy we was in the house and we wasn't out there.
Right. Yeah.
Doing the things I described to you earlier.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, for all intents and purposes, like me and my brother could have been crazy people. Like we could have been a real problem in the community.
Because
not like, you know, we had a lot of natural gifts.
Yeah, because first of all, there's two of you. There's two of you and you're giants, right? Yes. Like I met you in person. Like you are, how tall are you?
I'm 6'5".
Yeah, you you are a giant.
Yes.
Right,
yes.
So you got like these two big kids that are like, you know, that totally like on the same page all the time. Totally, you could have been a menace to society for sure.
Yes.
So, yeah.
In more ways than one, you know, then it's just a lot going on. There's a lot going on. So
there's a lot going on for sure.
So my grandmother always used to support us with that, get us all this stuff, drawing books, markers, pens, pencils, color pencils. And then we would go to, me and my brother would go down to the program Fly and we would go down there and print out Dragon Ball Z pictures or whatever we wanted to copy.
Oh,
we just draw those all the time.
Yeah.
So it just kind of worked out in this perfect little perfect concoction of us having this resource for us to be able to facilitate us becoming better artists, you know?
Right.
So by the time we get to high school, me and my brother have a very strong practice of concert drawing, rendering, and portraiture, just based off drawing anime pictures all the time, because you have to have a very steady hand and you have to have a very good eye for spatial relations. So
yeah,
it just worked out in that way.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a moment where you thought that maybe pursuing a life as a creator or an artist wasn't for you? Like, did you ever doubt your ability or anything like that?
I mean, you've met me. I'm not someone that ever is in a lack for confidence.
Right. This is all 6'5" of you.
So I am someone who has always had a great belief in who I am. The only times I've ever had a doubt in what I should be doing would be more on an interpersonal relationship or who I identify as in the world because of how people see me versus their perception versus my reality, I would say. So those are the only two areas where I've ever struggled, I would say, especially coming up. But as an artist, I always thought I was the best and always wanted to be the best. So when I saw people who were better than me, as somebody that's super competitive, I always want to push myself to be better than that person or on their level. So yeah, like that was something that I learned fast when I went to Duke Ellington because I was around so many people that were better than me.
Yep.
I can't describe. When I went to school, our whole class, we all described 2009. I'm dating myself. I don't care. 2009, that's the best year that Duke Ellington had in terms of artists because everybody was a monster. We all had this insatiable desire to be the best one in the class. And that was a practice that we learned from the people that came before us because we were competing with them when we was in ninth grade. So we would see the upperclassmen and be like, I want to draw like this person. I want to be like Dexter. I want to be like Daniel. I want to be like Niles. I want to be like Joaquin. I want to be like, you know, all these. I want to be like Indy. I want to be like they're so good. I want to be like, well, you know, we had these people that we could look to directly that were our age and see their ability and where they were.
Right.
And how we wanted to be at or above or exceed their levels. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's so important. Like, I think that the people that you surround yourself with at any age and within any talent, any industry, any craft, those are the people that are going to push you to be better, right? And having an environment like Duke Ellington School or anything else is a way that you can gather all of that talent together so that you can learn from each other and grow from there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a special thing.
It is.
Did you and your brother ever compete, like, for, to be the number one artist in school or otherwise?
Yes. I mean, and yeah. My brother, that's my rival. You know, we always say that to each other whenever we do something new or discover a new style, be it music, writing, education, abilities. You know, it's immediate. Oh, you learn how to do that, huh? All right, check this out. Check this out. You see that? You see that? You check this out. So that, yes, me and my brother pushed each other. But we pushed each other in different directions as well. So for me and my artistic practice, I became someone who was very much enamored with like realism and painting and trying to be. So my friends now, they all call me like the joke, jack of all trades. Cause it's like, it's not many tasks that I can't complete at a high level. Mm-hmm. But my brother, he's more of a specialist. Like he has things that he's just good at and he's good at those things. And he doesn't have an interest in being good at things outside of that, if that makes sense.
Oh, interesting.
So that's one of the key.
Okay.
Differences in our personalities.
So he stays in his lane and you you know, you're always trying to dabble in the next thing. So what are you most interested in now from an artist's perspective? Like what types of things have you been animating or drawing or creating?
Well, if I'm being honest, I just did a painting. I'm trying to learn how to do multimedia portraiture.
Uh-huh.
So I put together a painting for a program called Soul. It's a student athlete accelerator where they mentor student athletes in the Washington, D.C. and California, New York, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and Washington State and help them to understand the pitfalls of what happens when you're a student athlete. That's what it does.
Yeah.
So I did help them with a fundraiser. I put together a painting and the painting was supposed to be a representation of the journey of a student athlete. So I'm someone who loves doing portraits. So I made this big 5x5 foot painting of a student athlete, and it was half made of a basketball and the other half was like a regular traditional painting. And then it had a tassel that I had to make out of yarn and thread. And I incorporated that into the painting. So I'm trying to figure out how to do more multimedia pieces.
Yeah.
So that was the latest thing I was trying to dabble in.
When you're making portraits, are you doing it for the person that is sitting for you? Or are you doing it for the world? Or are you doing it for yourself?
So I had to add that conversation to my teacher, Mr. Mike Easton at Duke Ellington School of the Arts. He told me that art has three missions or three vehicles of communication. You have to commemorate, mm-hmm. to educate, or to, I'm forgetting the third one. And I'm sorry, but I'm forgetting the third one. But it's commemorate, educate, and it's something else.
Sorry, Mr. Easton. Yeah, he will remember one day.
Yeah, I will remember. It might be entertain or something like that. One of those three, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
So of those three things, I've chosen to think that my practice is about commemorating or education. So those are the two lanes I always go into. So when I do a portrait of something or someone, mm-hmm. it's typically to commemorate them or an achievement they've done. Or to try to illustrate something that's going on in the world and be reflective.
Got it. Good answer. Tell me a little bit. I'm going to pivot a little because I think art's a big part of what you do.
Yes.
But now, and so is podcasting.
Yes.
And you have this podcast that I mentioned earlier, Beyond Hood and Evil.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about what you guys talk about, how it started, and then I also know you guys have won like awards as well. So
yes.
What's special about that show and why should our listeners maybe go check you guys out?
So Beyond Hood and Evil, it's a comedic podcast about the Black experience. That's my elevator pitch. it was a journey. So it started during the pandemic between me and my main man, Mike. Mike is a friend of mine from college. We met in 2009, the summer of 2009, became fast friends. And we've always stayed connected here and there. You know, I'm not the best person with the phone, if I'm being completely mm-hmm. candid, mm-hmm. but I'm always someone that had the genuine belief. Like if I was your friend when we last spoke, I should be your friend when I speak to you next time, which is not how mm-hmm. people see the world. But hey, you know, I'm trying to get better about it.
Yeah.
But so we reconnected over COVID after his wedding. He got married. I went to the wedding. We stayed in contact and we just would keep in touch. Talk, chat. And mm-hmm. we decided that our conversations were pretty good because at the time he said that his partner was saying he would find them her laughing and giggling and stuff at the conversations we were having. And it's also at the same time, my twin brother, Kiego, he had a podcast too called Verified Podcast. And I had all these ideas about ways that he could market and grow his podcast to make it better. And he was just like, I'm not going to do that. Once you get a podcast and then you do it on your podcast. And again, me and my brother being competitive, I was like, word, you're just going to disrespect me. All right, check this out. I'm about to make my own podcast. So I was very, but when I was presented with the opportunity to do Beyond Hood and Evil with Mike and our buddy, JVon, his name Jay, he's a very talented videographer, photographer that serves the whole country and Africa. He's really good. He used to work with Toby Nwegwe and all this other stuff. Like, he's fire. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to do a podcast together. We were trying to come up with a name, and me being the wordsmith that I am, I was like, man, we should call it Beyond Hood and Evil, like the Nietzsche book, you know, because it's a philosophical podcast and the original idea was supposed to be like Beyond was going to be Mike and he was going to talk about wellness. Hood was going to be JVon and he was going to talk about, no, Beyond was going to be Mike and Jay because Jay was very religious and we wanted to incorporate that into the podcast. And then we had Mike, who was going to do more esoteric and wellness topics. And then I was going to do Hood and Evil because I'm somebody who's able to talk about a lot of things and can relate it to interpersonal stories and help it reach a broader audience. So that was the original idea. JVon couldn't do it. Fast forward, me and Mike end up doing it. I just end up doing the whole thing, lion's share of all the work, like editing, mixing, recording, producing, branding, marketing, doing everything for the podcast, built the website, all the whole nine.
Yeah.
And then people just start listening and it just, they was like, man, y'all podcast is good. And I was like, word.
Yeah.
And that's, it just kind of took off from there.
What do you think has surprised you the most about the podcast?
I guess the range of the message. Like people.
Yeah.
Because it's not like I'm a famous person. I'm not like a super popular person. Like I kind of just keep to myself more or less.
Yeah.
But I guess it's like, if you have a story that people can identify with or see themselves in, they typically will engage with, you know?
So you didn't think that people would be listening, it sounds like.
I didn't really think people was going to check it out like that. I mean, I know I was, I'm a pretty funny guy. I'm very personable. I'm funny.
Right.
I got charisma.
Yeah.
I got a magnetism to me, but I wasn't sure if people were going to want to hear my perspective on things that's going on or, you know, I know I had an interesting story because anytime I would tell somebody my story, they would just be quiet.
Sure. Yeah.
And usually to take it back. And they're like, what happened to you? That happened to you. It's like, hey, you know, growing up, it was different. I grew up in a different way. People just always taking it back by that. And they're like, man, you should be such a different person. I'm like, yeah, but I made the choice to be positive, and that's important to me. So Beyond Hood and Evil, that's what Mike was too. He has a similar story to me, but his story is on the West Coast. So he had to deal with gangs and this and that and this and that. So that's what makes Beyond Hood and Evil Beyond Hood and Evil. Was Mike and I in tandem, we've always had that energy, that synergy between us where if he's talking and I'm talking, we can always bounce things off each other. So much so, this is a personal story, then I stopped. We tried to become RAs together in college.
Yeah.
And we interviewed together for the position. So he and I both came in for the interview.
Like a job share?
As a tandem. No, not as a tandem. Like if you hire Mike, you got to hire me. If you hire me, you got to hire Mike. It was a thing. Like it was a real thing. We tried, you know. And the funny part, we actually got the job. So it was crazy. Like,
so you both got the job?
Yeah.
Did you share a room? Like how did that work?
Definitely not. You know, the job didn't work out for me. Let me put it like, but Mike was able to stay on. So yeah.
Oh, you got fired as an RA. I guess I ain't get fired.
I never was fired. I had to unceremoniously resign from the position. That's the way I like it.
All right. That's what we're going to put on the record anyway.
Yes. I was a different guy.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So you've come a long way from who you were back in kindergarten. Like this is, it's like a real journey. If you were to, I'm trying to pick a version of Chris, but if you were to go back to the younger version of yourself. So let's say it's like third grade. Like you've been in this elementary school now a couple of years. You've seen a couple of things happening. Third grade was when I'm still processing, but like the first time that you really experienced one of your friends dying, right? Mm. Yeah. What advice would you give to your younger self?
If I had to give one piece of advice to my younger self, it would just say to keep going. I mean, it's that. Mm-hmm. That sounds very rudimentary, but it is. It's like, so that's what it is. Like you can't let it bother you. And sometimes stuff, I mean, generally things really didn't bother me. And that's still to this day, because I have learned to compartmentalize a lot of things. So it's like, oh, that's okay. It's just something that happens. But
right.
I guess if I had to tell him, it's like, man, just keep going and keep doing you. Like, it's going to work out. Like, don't worry to think what other people think
right
about what you're doing or how the path that you're moving. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah,
don't be scared to take risks, because after that experience, like, I became very risk averse. Because, you know, I was like, man, you could die. Makes like, sense. You could die, yeah. You know, you could
yeah.
die.
Yeah.
So it just became a thing in my mind. Like, I don't want to die. So,
right.
You know, so much so I used to have this is going to sound crazy. I used to have this dream, a reoccurring dream where I would be laying down and I would be looking up at the ceiling and these lights would be going by. And I didn't know how I was moving, but I was laying down and people were looking down at me. And I didn't know what was happening. And then as I became to understand what it meant to be in a hospital, what it meant to be on a stretcher, what it meant to be in an emergency situation, I was like, oh my God, in this moment, I am someone who is in dire straits. I am someone who may be about to die or need to be rushed in some capacity to this place. And I remember I had this out of body type of experience. Like, I would have this dream often. That's why I remember it. Like, I used to have it often until I got to college. I used to have this dream a lot. I'd be looking down on myself. And I was this tall dude. I had like this big curly mohawk hairstyle. I had earrings, I had shades on. I was in all black trench coat, black shoes, looked like one of the singers in Jodeci. Like, I looked like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just, and yeah. I remember I used to make all my decisions, especially like how I dress, how I presented myself, to be opposite of that. Cause I didn't want that to happen for me.
Right.
Cause I was like, I can't be that way. So I had this very solid image of what it meant to be in dire straits. And I wanted to make decisions to be the opposite of that. But as I got to college and I started to explore like how I wanted to be as a professional and how I want to present in the world,
mm-hmm.
that's when I started trying to ebb in those things. Like, I don't have no tattoos or nothing or no piercings, but I did get the curly mohawk. I did get the long jacket. I did get the black shoes. I did get the black shirt. And I put it on and nothing happened. So I was like, well, maybe it was just a dream. Maybe I'm outside of that now. Maybe I can begin to be a bit more forward and more intentional with the way I try to do things and be a little bit more of a risk taker, someone who's willing to take risk and go on journeys and stuff like that. So,
yeah. Mohawk, huh? Jacket.
Yes.
I need to see a picture of this. Yeah.
I look like Patrick Mahomes.
It ain't real. It ain't real till you got a picture of it.
I said a picture. I look like Patrick. I was Patrick Mahomes before Patrick Mahomes. You've seen the Patrick Mahomes haircut? It looked goofy. Yeah, that's how I look. That's how I look.
Yeah.
Less like
you
him.
You created goofy. The trend. You did
yeah,
it. You did it.
I did.
Well, Chris, we've covered so much. And one of the last things that we do with all of our guests is we put them through a speed round. You ready? Are you ready for speed round, Chris?
Yes.
Stith?
Yes.
Awesome. The correct answer is no one's ready for speed round, but I think I got a pretty good feeling about you.
Okay.
So here we go. What is one thing about you that no one expects?
One thing that most people don't know about me that they wouldn't expect is that I am a business owner, stiffworks.com. Check us out.
Oh, that's a little plug right there. What is a book, a movie, or a TV show with characters that you relate to?
Orson Scott Card's Heart's Hope. I always saw myself as the sink.
Wow, you're so deep and you're a reader. That's really interesting. What is your favorite mom dish?
My favorite mom dish is oyster stuffing.
Oyster stuffing. That sounds so good.
Yes.
Did she make any for you for Thanksgiving?
I actually didn't make it home for Thanksgiving this year, you know.
Oh, that's so, right.
Yes.
That's right. Because you moved.
Yes.
You moved out of the DC into the LA. That's right. What is your least favorite food?
My least favorite food is swine. I don't dine on swine. Get that pork off your fork.
Don't dine on swine. So you don't even eat bacon?
I don't eat any swine at all. And if this is going to sound crazy, I'll make it quick because I know I could be long-winded.
Yeah.
All my favorite rappers didn't eat pork. So I was like, I want to be a good rapper. I want to be a good rapper, so I don't eat pork.
That's a great reason.
This is many moons ago. Yeah.
All right. I will accept that answer. Who is someone out there that you would want to talk to on your podcast that you haven't talked to yet?
Kanye West.
That would be an interesting one.
Easy layup. Quick work.
Whoa. Yeah. I would definitely listen to that. That would be very interesting.
Yes.
All right. Last question. What does being a modern minority mean for you?
A modern minority to me is someone who's a representation of who they want to be and not who society tells them they should be.
That's a perfect elevator pitch kind of answer, Christith.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your time today. This was such a pleasure because I know you in so many different forms, and it was just super cool to chat about your life, your childhood, and what makes you who you are today. So thanks for your time today.
I appreciate you. Thank you for having me on the podcast. And I can't stress enough, this is a great platform, and I hope it continues to grow and elevate to be the great tool to get these stories out to the world.
And that's our show.
Like what you heard? Please subscribe, leave a review, and a 5-star rating on your favorite podcasting platform.
Now more than ever, people need to be hearing these stories. Please share our show with a friend or three.
Want to learn more or got something to share? Visit modmypod.com or email us, hi mom@modmypod.com.
You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter @modminpod. We'd love to hear from you.
That's it for now. I've been Ramin Segal.
And I'm still Sharon Lee Tony.
Remember, we're all modern minorities out there.
We'll talk to you soon.
Potluck. Potluck.